You ready?
Okay. Good morning. Today is Wednesday, October 20th, 2010. It's 9:30 a.m. and the City Council will come to order. Carla, can you please call the roll?
Leonard.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish. Saltzman.
Here.
Adams.
Here. We'll begin with communications. Can you please read the title for item number 1350?
Request of Sabina Hilding to address council regarding herbicides and pesticides in Portland.
Sabine Hilding? Hi, welcome. Glad you're here. You just need to give us your first and last name. Please have a seat. And
Sabina Hilding.
Clock in front of you will help you count down your 3 minutes.
Yes, Mayor Adams. I wanted to ask you, David Delk could not come with us, and I wanted to ask if I could share this with a couple of people that came with me, and if Joan Horton could speak instead of David.
Sorry, that's not the rules of the chamber.
So can Joan speak instead of David?
No.
He has called for a work conflict. Okay.
Sorry.
Good morning. My name is Sabina Hilding. We live in a... Sarah Incinus will speak later. We live in Southwest Portland. We'd like to bring up the issue of pesticide usage in Portland. We mean herbicides, fungicides, insecticides, and rodenticides. Specifically, we want to address the issue of pesticides used in landscaping, whether by homeowners, Portland parks, road maintenance crews, landlords, and especially by landscape companies. Before you is a bundle of flyers, which we gave you. Could you give them? All right. The contents are based on thousands of studies in sound science. If you go through the bundle, you'll see highlighted not only an admonition against pesticides, but a description of what a sustainable landscape should look like. Despite years of Metro admonitions, it all ends up in the river, pesticides and fertilizers are still widely used as a quick fix to maintain lands in Portland. The grounds around public and private buildings are treated in this toxic manner. In the urban area, neatness is considered a desirable condition. Property values are associated with neatness. Grasses around poles and along fences are considered messy. Geometric monoculture is the norm in landscaping. But a truly healthy landscape is not geometric. It looks uneven and even unruly at times, and it changes with the seasons. In the course of all this insecticiding and herbiciding, a lot of native animal and plant life dies, and water is polluted, soil is compacted. We want to tell you that we feel that this process is simply not sustainable. We don't want to get into an argument in which we have to defend a particular chemical as more or less toxic. We don't want to go head-to-head with the Parks Department, which obviously uses plenty of chemicals. We do want to alert the council to the fact that landlords, both office and residential buildings, hire maintenance companies that use stronger product than homeowners. Families in apartments have no choice. We want to point out that with infill, there is no buffer zone. We can't get away. If your neighbor sprays, there is no ordinance to stop him. We ask that City Council, the City of Portland, set an example and cease using chemicals to maintain outdoor spaces on its own grounds. The grounds around buildings belonging to Portland can be maintained without the use of chemicals. Buildings where Portland rents offices and other spaces are usually run by a management company. Well, sorry.
Got another 30 seconds.
Which hires a landscape maintenance company that cares only about getting the grounds cleaned quickly. That means the company uses chemicals and the plants, well, okay. The responsibility for this toxic maintenance is distanced from the property owner and from the City of Portland, but it should not be. We're asking the City of Portland to curb landscape maintenance companies by shaping an ordinance. We're asking the City of Portland to send a stronger message to homeowners by shaping an ordinance. We would like Portland to begin the process of shaping ordinances, and we'd like to help.
So, Ms. Hilding, do you have a... You don't have to, but by chance, is there an ordinance of another city that you think is inspiring and serves as a best practice?
It's a good question, Mayor Adams, and I would be happy to research that.
We can do that, too. So.
I don't yet know. I know that there are currently there's some sort of pesticide thing going on with schools. Mm-hmm. Are you aware of that? Mm-hmm. So that would be the only thing I know about.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. It's very good.
Thank you. And everything is here and in the flyers.
Great.
Thank
you. So we have to read the item for 1351 for the record.
Request of David Delk to address council regarding herbicides and pesticides in Portland.
And hope that he'll be able to reschedule and come back. Can you please read the communications item 1352? Thanks, sir.
Request of Sarah Instenis to address council regarding herbicides and pesticides in Portland.
Hi, welcome.
Morning.
Glad you're here. You just need to give us your first and last name, and that clock in front of you will help you count down your 3 minutes.
Okay. My name is Sarah Instenis, and I just have an account that I'd like to tell you guys about in support of Sabina's case. So I would like to add that no public area in Portland should be chemically treated without ample warning ahead of time. People in an area should be warned. Also, they should be able to choose whether they want to manually remove an invasive plant on public property before the area is chemically treated. This spring, I recognized invasive garlic mustard on the hillside between my garden and a public roadway, an area of about 400 square feet. I had just moved into the house and was planning what to plant in my garden. The next day I had off work, I pulled all of this garlic mustard, only to realize afterward that the area had already been sprayed with a systemic herbicide the day before, which my neighbor told me. I had spent several hours out there pulling without gloves, getting the chemical, which was glyphosate, on my skin. The effects of glyphosate are not immediately apparent, so I didn't realize the area had been sprayed. Gradually, the whole area turned brown, even though I had already bagged and tossed the pulled garlic mustard. The area stayed brown, and nothing has seeded there since. The herbicide, even though I pulled the plants the next day, quickly invaded not only the garlic mustard, which I took out, but also the soil, because the native plants on my hillside died too. I have read that glyphosate exposure is implicated with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, a form of cancer. People should be warned with plenty of time so that they have a choice to manually remove an invasive weed before chemicals are applied, especially if the area is next to their home. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And this was in Southwest Portland?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Can you please read the title, Carla, for item number 1353?
Request of Kurt Albright to address council regarding damages incurred from the meth issue.
Mr. Albright, hi, welcome. Hi.
Kurt Albright. The reason that I came back to the city council is that I realized last time I was here that I didn't address a problem that is in relation to the sewers. What's going on with a lot of us as landlords is that you have problems highly impacting the apartment communities, and those are the meth addicts and the drug addicts. And what happens is that these people get high on their drugs, and they disassemble and reassemble the units without you knowing it, which causes an incredible amount of vandalism and damage, and you wind up having to rebuild your units. I've been fighting for 5 years now to get my neighborhood back. And one of the things that I would like to suggest is that you take these methadone clinics where all these drug addicts seem to concentrate into the neighborhoods around the methadone clinics and move them out into the industrial areas where it's not convenient for the drug people to congregate and to get their drugs. What happens there is that these drug people now start dispersing out of these concentrated high crime rate areas because they don't have a place to congregate anymore. And with that, we can resolve a lot of the crime problems in our neighborhoods when you have the methadone and the blood clinics, you know, close by. And if you separate the blood clinics and the methadone clinics, you can resolve a lot of the concentrated areas where these drug people want to congregate and live close to where it's convenient, and their neighbors are drug addicts and their methadone people are getting their methadone and then they're giving it out to the neighbors or selling it to the neighbors and what have you, and you disperse this out to where you don't no longer have these high intense areas of drug people. And I think that would make a major impact on our crime in the city and the way that the drug people deal with their issues. And that's basically what I wanted to say. With the sewers, I think that the city council or the city should take a second look as how they bill landlords. There's not a landlord in the city that feels that the city fairly bills according to the sewer and the consumption of what the landlord uses in water. The sewer amount is probably only 50% of the water consumption, and yet we're getting billed 1.5 times. And no landlord can afford that, and no landlord anywhere in the city, any landlord you talk to, finds that this billing is fair. It's just exorbitant.
Thank you, Mr. Albright. Just a clarifying question. The address on the request to testify, is there, and these are run by the county, so they're not, it's not something that we're as familiar with maybe as you are. Is there a methadone clinic near the location of those apartments?
Yes. Okay. But just 162nd and Burnside. So a few blocks away.
As a clarification, methadone is a liquid, and when it's dispensed at the clinic, the clients are required to drink it in front of the...
No, they're not. It depends on the level of your treatment. Now, I had to deal with a drug addict wife for 15 years, and I would really love to share. I could tell you a whole story about the whole thing. And she's deceased now. And one of the things that they do is they disperse weekly and monthly. And methadone is not only in liquid form; it's also in tablet form, which historically methadone is more of a drug overdose problem. At least I know of in other parts of the country. I don't know about in Portland, but it's a higher overdose and death problem than the actual drugs themselves. And what these people do is they take these cases of liquid or bottles of tablets home with them, depending on the level of their treatment. And what happens to a person on methadone is they feel more, I guess, as a fitting into society because they're doing something legal. But the truth is that this methadone is just as dementing as the drugs that they're trying to avoid.
And you've obviously had some personal experience with that. Thank you very much for sharing with us.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Carla, can you please read item 1354?
Request of Barry Joe Stahl to address council regarding turning Wapato Jail into a medical marijuana research and production facility.
Mr. Stahl, hi. Welcome back.
Sometimes I just can't help but think that there is a God. Warren Cook was my teacher at Portland Community College at the time that I took some electives there, the police class and the corrections class, and he was citing the Wapato Jail back in 1996. And he said that we don't have a justice system, we have an injustice system, and if you need to know any more about that, there's a book called The Rich Get Richer and the Poor Get Prison. Well, I've proved that. Well, I made it through because of my talents, and one of my talents is a musician. And backstage, I got to see the magic trick, and there's no magic. It's all trick. And I've also been through our justice system, and there's no justice. It's all system. So here's a song, public service announcement. I watched Fiddler on the Roof recently about the culture's changing, and I did that when I was a kid in high school. So here's a song. Electors, election time's here at last. It's time to vote. Time's fading fast. And if you still have a ballot to cast, net me a better catch. Vote to sell pot to street kids with AIDS. Weed grows for free, but free never paid. Some taxes you'll spend like money to burn. When will we ever learn? For mama, vote for a scholar. For papa, one who's rich as a king. You all know I will still holler. A doc? Or one higher than anything? Portland's real pretty with tourists a hit, but under our bridges it still smells like shut your mouth. One of the things that we had here is a Saint Brother Andre, now is now Saint Andre, part of the homily was talking about this gal who went to the judge who admitted he hated people and didn't respect the law, and he said, well, she's nagging me, and if I don't do something, she'll strike me. Well, I'm not going to strike you, except I've been struck pretty hard. And police commissioner, I have this certified copy of the evidence that proves that my nonprofit landlord, PCRI, committed fraud, perjury, illegally destroyed my stuff twice as I was appealing a case. I need a police report written against Judge Edward Jones for official misconduct. I gave you the certified copy of the entire file yesterday, so I want a police report. That guy's going to be prosecuted. We have a mental health crisis. We have a health crisis. We have a facility where all of our needs could really be met if we decided to be kind. So let's get some Portland Community College nursing students and some people having some EMT training, and we'll get all these people that you call problems that need housing and mental health and drug treatment, and we'll do that at the Wapato Jail, and we'll recognize that the gateway drug out of heroin, which I hear the Portland police sell a lot of, and why not? You know, they lie about a lot of stuff, we understand. But we can use marijuana, cannabis, as a therapeutic to get people away from heroin.
Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. We will now consider the consent agenda. Any discussion of the consent agenda?
We need Commissioner Fish back in the room.
Oh. All right. Then let's proceed with time certain. Can you please read time certain report item number 1355?
Willamette River Combined Sewer Overflow Tunnel Program Update.
Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm happy to bring forward the annual program update for the Big Pipe Project. The Bureau of Environmental Services is just about 1 year away from completing this 20-year, $1.4 billion project to control combined sewage overflows, or CSOs, into the Willamette River and the Columbia Slough. The tunnel boring machine constructing the six-mile-long east side Big Pipe Tunnel has reached the McLaughlin Boulevard shaft, which marks the end of the tunneling with Rosie, our tunnel boring machine. It is a momentous moment, and one we'll be celebrating with tours this November. So if any of my colleagues and their staffs are interested in getting a chance, the last chance to see the Big Pipe, please let us know, and we'll get you in those tours. In the final leg, the BES, Bureau of Environmental Services, will work on preparing the East Side Big Pipe Tunnel for activation, completing construction of the Swan Island Pump Station, the Portsmouth Force Main, which goes under Willamette Bluffs, the Balch Creek Consolidation Conduit in northwest Portland, the Selwood Wet Weather Pump Station. A substantial amount of work and a true project tunneling scheduling nightmare, all of these projects going on at once. But it's lucky for us that we have among the best talent in the wastewater management in here, right here in the city of Portland, and you're going to hear from them shortly. But they're responsible for keeping this project on time and on budget. And there's always one piece of the project I particularly like to highlight in light of the world's attention being focused on the amazingly safe rescue of 33 miners in Chile. The Big Pipe Project itself is a mining project. There's hundreds of people who have been hundreds of feet beneath the surface working in controlled, pressurized environments. And it's with much humility, but also, again, thanks to all involved, all the workers, all the managers, our contractors, to say that we have, we have not lost a soul yet. And we won't. And the injuries that we've occurred on site have been minor, to say the least. And on top of that, we've had one of the highest safety records seen in undertaking this type of project. We've been recognized by the Occupational Safety and Health Administration for our safety, both on the east side Big Pipe and the west side Big Pipe. And also, we are part of the Voluntary Protection Program. We've achieved that status, which is one that only is achieved through application of a rigorous safety program. So I once again want to congratulate, and I know the council joins me in congratulating and thanking all the laborers and the managers who have made this safety a reality. So now here to bring us the update is Environmental Services Director Dean Marriott and Willamette River Combined Sewage Overflow Chief Engineer Paul Grimmon.
Thank you, Commissioner, Mayor, members of the Council. I am Dean Marriott. With me is Paul Grimmon. You'll hear from him in just a moment. I wanted to just remind those that may be viewing that don't know what a combined sewer is and why we have overflows, just very quickly. Before we had wastewater treatment in Portland, which really began in 1952, so it's pretty recent in our history, we had a lot of sewers because we had a lot of people living here. The sewer system was designed to carry all the stormwater and all the sewage to the river. So we had a combined system, sewage and stormwater. Even after we built wastewater treatment in the early 1950s and expanded the treatment and improved on the treatment, there were still many, many times, virtually every time it rained, in the older portions of Portland, where we had this combined sewer system overflow to the river and the Columbia Slough. So as Commissioner Saltzman mentioned, we really began in earnest in the early 1990s to address that finally once and for all. And as he mentioned, we're within about 14 months of being finished. So the good news for you is that you will probably only see Paul Grimmon and I two more times to provide our semi-annual report to you. The really good news about that is it means we will be finished on time. The first slide, if we could have it, is just a timeline, again, to refresh your memory. We started this effort in earnest in the early 90s. We really started construction in the mid-90s, first by tackling the CSO problems associated with the Columbia Slough in North Portland. Then we did the west side projects to control overflows there, and now we're finishing up on the east side. The amount, the volume of combined sewage reaching the river has been controlled quite dramatically over the last 20 years. Since we really started this project, we had about 6 billion gallons of combined sewage reaching the Willamette and the Columbia Slough. We've controlled over two-thirds of that volume so far. So the quality of the water in the Willamette is actually considerably improved, and probably safe to say it's probably as clean as it's been in the last century right now. So the good news is it's going to get even better next year. The countdown, we had a 54 outfalls, which carried combined sewage to the slough and the Willamette. 36 of those at least are controlled. I think we may actually have a few more than that are controlled. We're down to the last less than 20 involved, mostly with the east side. We have engaged a lot of people in helping us control this problem and solve this problem. We've engaged thousands of homeowners. Over 25,000 homeowners have been personally responsive to our requests for assistance, disconnecting over 50,000 downspouts from their homes. We've had a lot of success with businesses disconnecting downspouts. And you may wonder, well, what would that actually accomplish? Well, it's gotten us over a billion gallons of stormwater out of the collection system just by allowing it to flow out onto their lawn or in their yard or garden as opposed to into the collection system. So it's been enormously successful. We really appreciate the civic engagement in helping us. The rest of the problem has really been addressed in a number of ways, but I want to just highlight some green infrastructure solutions. We've talked about eco roofs in the past and swales and planters and green streets, and we'll be back to you next month with a progress report on our Greater Green initiative, which really highlights the success of green infrastructure. Just want to point out a couple of slides here. Green streets, green roofs. Here's a green roof slide. We have over 200,000 square feet of eco roofs in Portland and another 200,000 coming in the next few years, really, again, becoming a national leader in this area. There's tremendous benefits from these systems. Green streets, we've got over 1,000 now, and we've got another 500 coming in the next few years. Again, the progress that we've seen just in the last decade has been enormous. And the benefits to the system, not only our environmental system, but our sewage collection system, have been measurable. These days, I think it's important to just highlight some of the other benefits. Green jobs, we've got over 100 staff in the city working on green infrastructure. And over 300 private sector jobs that we've been able to identify. We just updated this information this week. So over 400 green jobs directly attributed to our program, something we're very proud of.
If I might just interrupt you for a second, if you could go back to the photographs of the green streets.
Yes.
There's, as I go to neighborhood meetings, there's still a myth out in Portland that we, the council, spent $20 million of sewer money on bicycle paths. So if you look at the top right, that's what we're talking about, and what we invested the rate money in is these stormwater planters and the narrowing of the street, which makes it more safe for all modes of transportation. Is that
this is where we've had some success, and we are working closely with the Office of Transportation on identifying the green streets and the bike boulevard opportunities so that we can combine the stormwater management aspects with enhancing bicycle transportation routes. So we've actually identified a number of additional routes, and those will be in construction next year. But that is a good pictorial example of what we're talking about. We can actually narrow the street to discourage a lot of through traffic and high-speed traffic, but it encourages alternative modes of transportation.
And my understanding is that this surface stormwater management is cheaper than digging under the street and putting in a bigger pipe to help stop basement flooding.
Right. If the pipe is in good shape and we don't need to dig it up, then we can, rather than try to tear up the whole neighborhood to increase the size of the pipes to handle the stormwater, these kinds of green infrastructure techniques are cheaper.
And then tell me again how many jobs we helped create with that program.
Well, the slide here shows at least 300 private sector jobs that we've been able to identify. I think, if anything, that number's probably conservative.
Thank you.
I'm going to turn it over to Paul, who will get into the specifics about the East Side Tunnel project.
Okay, I'm going to talk about the type of project that we do as a last resort. As you see, the solid red line is the route of the tunnel. That's also to indicate how much has been completed, basically all of it. Our mining is done. We've got about a year worth of work left to do, so there's really the contract itself is 90% done on the East Side Tunnel. But we're still expecting completion in late summer, and things have gone pretty well so far. Contractors, Kiewit Bilfinger Berger, a joint venture, and the safety statistics that Commissioner Salzman had mentioned, we really have to credit to them. They've done a phenomenal job so far. Our base contract amount is $426 million. The mining has been done. It's been completed 4 months ahead of schedule. That was originally scheduled to be done in late January, early February. And so most of our project risk has been mitigated at this point. We still have some, a year's worth of work to do, but so far it's been really well done. Employment, again, it's been a contribution to local economy. We have 195 first-tier subcontracts. Those are contractors with direct contract with Kiewit, Bilfinger, Berger. Looking at all the subcontracts at all tiers, has been over 400. Our goal for minority women emerging small business participation was we identified $26 million in opportunities at the start, and with 1 year to go, we've hit $30 million. Again, Kiewit Bilfinger Berger has done a really good job in that respect, and we currently have about 190 craft workers still employed on the tunnel. Safety stats, the incident rate on the east side has been 2.9 compared with the state average of 5.4, and keep in mind that this construction is usually riskier than the average statewide statistics. And as far as our owner-controlled insurance program is involved, this project is rated very highly. Commissioner Salzman mentioned we have a number of challenges left to do in the next year, and we do. The Selwood CSO pump station, the Balch consolidation conduit, all these contracts are underway. Portsmouth Force Main, segments 1 and 2, and I'm going to talk a little bit about segment 2 here in a moment. Swallow Island CSO pump station, we're adding 3 additional pumps. And then as far as the tunnel is concerned, we have a lot of coordination to do over the next year with Portland Streetcar and TriMet Light Rail. We're all going to be working in the same spot. This just gives you an idea of the four main areas where we have the bulk of our work over the next year. And briefly, Portsmouth Force Main is in 2 pieces. This is a 66-inch diameter pressure line that goes from the Swan Island pump station across Swan Island. This is segment 1. This has been done mostly by open cut. It's still underway. Now, the little more difficult part is segment 2. This is a tunnel under Ward Bluff and under Willamette Boulevard. We had some differing site conditions when the mining originally began, and it's been very difficult, and we've tried a number of ways of mitigating that trouble. It finally came down to the fact that we were going to need a different type of tunnel boring machine, because what we've encountered is a combination of boulders with very soft ground. We knew about the very soft ground, but the boulders did not show up in any of the soil borings originally done, and that has complicated the job considerably. So our original engineer's estimate on segment two was a little over $30 million. The low bid was $19 million. On council item today, number 1375, we're going to request additional authority from council to cover what we think that it will take to finish this job, plus a contingency to cover the remaining construction. So that total would be $32 million, which is about 5% over what our original engineer's estimate was. So this is still within our project budget. On the good news, as Commissioner Salzman stated, the TBM has reached the end of the McLaughlin shaft on the tunnel. 4 years and 30,000 feet of mining is done. It's now been, they have to have a fair amount of preparation work over the next several weeks to prepare the TBM to be removed. And we will have an opportunity the first and second weeks of November for people to go down and take a look at the tunnel and see what it looks like. With that, that is the end of our presentation. We did have an opportunity for the Eastside CSO Review Committee to talk. I don't think anybody is here today. So if there are any questions, we'd be more than happy to answer them.
Any discussion? Good presentation. Thank you. Anyone wish to testify on this matter? All right.
So I would like to comment. It is helpful to hear about this on 6 months, every 6 months. Mm-hmm. And my generation, I think, has a lot to answer for when I talk to my children and think of their grandchildren and the things that we have not taken care of in our planet. This is a significant accomplishment of our generation to have corrected the problem that has existed for a century, and your team is to be commended, and Commissioner Salzman and others have worked very hard on this. We get a lot of flack for the things that we do wrong. We get a lot of flack for the things that we've actually done right, but people think that we've done wrong. This is something that I think we should all be proud of, and it is an investment by the ratepayers, and that we are very grateful for their understanding and your careful stewardship of their money.
Thank you very much.
Commissioner.
Well, I would just like to add, I think along the lines of what Commissioner Fritz was saying, that it takes a long time to live down bad reputations. I mean, people still refer today to the Cuyahoga River catching on fire. You know, I'm sure the Cuyahoga River is probably a lot cleaner today than it was then, but yep, that's still something people know about. And people still think the Willamette River is extremely contaminated with sewage. And we're not saying it, there's not sewage in the river still, but when you look at the dramatic reductions, we've reduced it over 75% from its heyday of six billion gallons a year. Mm-hmm. And we're, within next 14 months, we're going to be completing the project and reducing the volume well below a billion gallons a year. Mm-hmm. And I think water quality tests have shown there's fewer, bacteria associated with sewage in the river. Nevertheless, it's, sometimes it takes a long time to get the word out. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something we are working hard on, and I just want to commend BES, its staff, and also the staff of all the contractors that are working on this project again for making truly the biggest investment, largest public works investment in the city's history in cleaner rivers and the cleaner slough. And I know the appreciation for that. If it doesn't happen immediately, we will get the story out, and gradually we'll begin to change people's perceptions of things like that.
Thank you. So,
thank you
very much. Be on the lookout for some. We are going to be inviting the public to send in a coupon if they would like to take a tour of this facility before it's put in use. So, as you suggest, a lot of people are unaware of exactly what's going on because so much of it has been underground. And so in the next year, we're going to be trying to tell the story so that everyone understands where we've been investing their money. Thanks.
I'll entertain a motion to accept the report.
Moved.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Motion is approved. Well, now, thank you, gentlemen. I'm now entertain acceptance of the consent agenda. Is there any item that anyone wishes to poll? Carla, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Fritz?
I need to highlight 1360, which is accepting a $495,000 grant from the Safe Routes to School program, which is federal and state money that is coming to Portland, being used to improve, to provide pedestrian and bicycle improvements near 8 elementary schools. There are 2 in North Portland, 1 in Northeast, 1 in Southeast, 1 in Southwest, and 3 in East Portland. And this is money that's coming at almost no cost to the city, coming from the federal and state taxpayers, which is going to provide very necessary infrastructure near our schools. So I wanted to commend Mayor Adams for and his staff for his work on that project. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We'll move on to our... We cannot move on yet, so we'll go to the regular agenda. Can you please read the title and call the vote for 1371?
Create a new non-represented classification of web designer and establish a compensation rate for this classification. Fritz?
As I mentioned last week, I want to emphasize that I'm agreeing with the creation of the classification and doesn't indicate that I think it's a critical function, which, of course, is a different process to assess. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Can you please read the title for 1372?
Authorize acquisition of vehicles for use by city bureaus at $934,631.
Aye. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor and City Council. I'm John Hunt, Fleet Manager for the City of Portland. The item before you today is pretty much business as usual. We're just bringing to Council items that we would like to add to the fleet or upgrade, or in the case of lease rentals, we're identifying those units. I think the thing that makes this kind of special to me is that we've gone through our entire fleet, worked well with the bureaus, and in cases where they could return vehicles to us and trade those up for vehicles that will work better for the jobs that they do, we've actually identified those, and we'd like to seek approval through you all today and move forward with this project.
Discussion from council. Does anyone wish to testify on 1372? This is an emergency ordinance. Carla, can you please call the vote?
Fritz.
Thank you, John. I appreciate the fact that you sent us all the purpose for all of these vehicles, and so that's very helpful. I note that one of them is for the new park ranger for Forest Park, and so that's exciting news from Commissioner Fish. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1372 is approved. Well, we're in betwixt and between. Do your items have, are they very controversial?
I don't think so. We have people here, so.
All right, can you please read the title, first reading of a non-emergency ordinance 1373?
Amend contract with CH2M Hill for additional application software development on the wet weather flow primary treatment system at the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant, project number E05512.
Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. The Bureau of Environmental Services is designing an enhanced primary treatment process, which will improve the treatment plant efficiency at Columbia Boulevard, our main treatment plant. The Bureau is also designing a wet weather flow screening facility to expand primary treatment capacity. Both these projects make sure the increased flow from the big pipe can be appropriately tested. This ordinance amends an existing BES contract with the consulting firm CH2M Hill for additional software professional maintenance services related to these improvements. The cost of this contract amendment is estimated at $178,000 and is needed as we start bumping up against the deadlines for the big pipe completion. This is a first reading.
Is there anyone that wishes to testify on 1373? 1373 moves to second reading next week. Can you please read the title for 1374?
Authorize the Bureau of Environmental Services to acquire a certain permanent easement and other real property interests necessary for construction of the East Lentz Floodplain Restoration Project, number E08464, through the exercise of the city's eminent domain authority.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. This ordinance authorizes the Bureau of Environmental Services to acquire easements and property to construct an earthen berm, to separate public and private property and a new street from Southeast 112th Avenue to Southeast 108th in the East Lentz Floodplain Restoration Project. Constructing this new street will allow BES to remove bridges on Southeast 108th and Southeast 112th that cross Johnson Creek and clear the way for the East Lentz Floodplain Restoration Project. For more than 10 years, the city has been purchasing property in this project boundary through its willing seller program and removing homes and other structures from harm's way. This restoration project will improve water quality and wildlife habitat and will increase flood storage capacity in the East Lentz floodplain area. One point here, this ordinance differs from a similar ordinance council adopted earlier this month. The September ordinance authorized acquiring a permanent easement from Jameson Partners. This ordinance gives BES the ability to construct the new road that will serve the residents who have moved out of the floodplain. And as I've discussed with the mayor, who took a very strong leadership role in convincing many of the property owners to sell to us, we will be at an appropriate point commemorating the construction of this project that will indefinitely improve water quality habitat and reduce flooding. This is also a first reading.
Is there anyone that wishes to testify on 1374? All right, this moves to a second reading next week. Congratulations. Can you please read the first reading of 1375?
Authorize additional change order authority to the Director of the Bureau of Environmental Services or his designee for the Portsmouth Force Main Segment 2 construction project, number E09039.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. This ordinance was what was the one referred to in the presentation on the CSO update. It is related to constructing the Portsmouth Force Main tunnel. And during the tunneling for the project, the contractor encountered some difficult soil conditions that were not foreseen by our geotechnical analysis, hence delaying the construction and increasing the cost. This ordinance gives Environmental Services an added change order authority to move the work ahead quickly and the authority to compensate the contractor for its additional cost. Paul Gribben, as you heard from earlier, is here to answer any questions.
Any discussion on this matter from council?
I just have a comment, and that is that this and 1373 show why we have a contingency and why we are prudent in our budgeting and why we were very careful when we were looking at the savings from the Big Pipe project, that we needed to continue to leave a good size of contingency because you just don't know what you're going to come across when you do a project of this magnitude. So I greatly appreciate the careful budgeting, including the importance of the contingency.
All right, moves to a second reading. Oh, anyone who wish to testify on this matter? Now we'll move to a second reading next week, and that gets us to our 10:15 time certain, which is a vacation request. Can you please read item number 1356?
Denial of a vacation request for a portion of Southwest Hillsdale Court and a portion of Southwest 43rd Avenue, south of Southwest Beaverton Hillsdale Highway.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning.
What are we looking at here?
Good morning, Mayor Adams, City Council. Kurt Kruger with the Office, Portland Bureau of Transportation. And to my right is Linda Berth in our right-of-way section. Our presentation has changed slightly since last night, so I'll keep my comments very brief, and I think what will be more valuable is hearing from the petitioner and some of the residents. But just briefly, a very short background. We have probably one of the longest street vacations on record at the city before you today, and I think one of the commissioners on the council may have seen this in a past position on the Planning Commission as well. We have a street vacation on Southwest Hillsdale Court, approximately at Southwest 43rd Avenue in Southwest Portland. At its face value, this is about a 500-foot section of right-of-way that's fairly unimproved, and at quick glance looks to be easily vacatable. When this petition came in approximately 10 years ago, there was general agreement on the property owners at the time, along with the city engineer and a recommendation from the Planning Commission to support this vacation. And before we came to council to work out some of the, at the time, more minor details of access issues that had to be resolved. This was almost at city council approximately 3 years ago. Unfortunately, we were been able to reach a resolution with all the abutting property owners who have changed over time. And there are current access and loading and operational needs that are being used in that right-of-way today. The denial that we were going to be here with was to put an end to this project that has gone on so long with property owners that have changed names, and if this was to start over, start clear with a new petition. This is where I'm going to turn this over quickly to the petitioners who have been able to possibly reach some compromise with some of the property owners. And before we can give you any sort of recommendation, I think we need to hear what may have come up, what we may need to review after hearing their proposal more in depth, and then come back with a recommendation on how to proceed with this.
You will be coming back.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Let's go to the sign-up sheet.
We have two people, Barbara Sedlin and Jack Stanley.
Morning.
Barbara Sedlin's a petitioner. Jack Stanley is a person testifying.
Okay.
We're the presenters.
Okay. We'll hear from the presenters then. Welcome to City Council. You just need to give us your first and last name, and if you're a lobbyist for anyone else, then you just need to disclose that fact.
My name is Barbara Zidell Sedlin, and I'm not a lobbyist.
My name's Dean Alterman. I'm appearing here as an attorney for the petitioner.
My name's Peter Finley Fry. I'm a land use plan consultant.
Who would like to begin?
I will begin. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the council men and women for allowing me to appear before them. As I said, my name is Barbara Zidell Sedlin. I was born and raised in Portland. For the last about 40 years, I've lived in New York, journeying to Portland at least, I would say, on average of twice a year because I still had family members here and because I owned four pieces of property here, or I was helping my mother manage them when she was elderly.
Is are you a member of the family that includes Jay Zidell?
Yes, he's my half brother's son.
And what by chance does New York have over Portland? What possible reason would you have for choosing New York over?
Nothing. At the time I was making the decision, Portland had only parking lots downtown. And it's not that I don't like them, but it was a little empty, and it's totally changed due to, I guess, the work of prior city councilmen and other people, too. And I guess myself, because although I lived in Portland, I carried out two other projects here in this 13-year period. Both of them were on the east side. I totally renovated a building, changed the use from a sort of desolate wholesale use to a mixed-use building, and I subsequently sold that to a local business person. The same thing with an adjacent warehouse. I changed that into a showroom. I rented it for 10 years. When that lease was up, I sold it to another local businessman. And during this time, I have no staff of consequence in New York. I worked only with local planners, architects, lawyers, engineers. I've had about 9 different firms that I've worked with, and I'm still working with 4 of the original firms, not working with engineers right now. You know, I have had experience, and we did not expect this street vacation to take 13 years. We thought it would take about 2 years. Well, it took us over 3 years to get the petitions themselves because the area was extremely large. In Portland, I operate under the name of Sam Rose Properties, and each of the properties I had was just for convenience in a different subsidiary. And so you may have heard the name. When I started the street vacation in late 1997, early 1998, I thought it was going to be simple. Well, since then, I've spent over $125,000 in direct project costs. This does not include my stays in hotels, my transportation, my eating, and many other associated costs. This is actually costs that went into the Portland economy directly. And of course, that does not include my time because I am a professional city planner. I am also have a degree in economics. And that's how I actually got into this. I looked at the area as a planner and I felt that there was a big opportunity here. And the area we're talking about is about 10 or 15 minutes from downtown Portland on Beaverton Hillsdale Highway. In addition, it is accessible from Consul Crest and from the expressway should a person not want to go out Barber and Beaverton. And it lies between the Consul Crest neighborhood and the Hayhurst neighborhood. So it's got a very interesting and strategic location. I won't go into details. I've had many opportunities to sell this in the past, but I had a certain idea that it wasn't in the right condition to sell. I felt that the property was obsolescent in its current form. I still feel that. If you look at that street picture up there, it's a little dim, but you'll see that the street is in disrepair. It has not been paved by the city in the entire 30 years that I have known about it. There are potholes in the street. The property to the west, particularly Mr. Hoselden's property, is subject to flooding from water that's coming off the hillside to the east, flowing over my property and going into his property.
If I could interrupt you, I'm sorry. We normally have testimony at 3 minutes each, but for the sake of this discussion, I'm going to give each side 10 minutes. So if, you've got 4.5 minutes, so we'll give you another, 5.5 minutes?
Okay.
But if you could stick within that 10 minutes so I keep both sides sort of equal, that would be great.
Okay. The size of the property I now own is about 1 acre and 1/3. If the street were vacated, it would be slightly under 2 acres. The vision I had was to have, in 2005, when I presented it to the Planning Commission, we drew up this hypothetical plan, which is one of many possible alternatives, but this plan included 2 retail buildings of approximately 2 to 4 stories along Beaverton Hillsdale and 30 to 40 townhouses. I don't want to get mired in any details because the market has totally changed since then, and I would like to turn this over to my planning consultant, Peter Fry.
So I'm going to go through some talking points. I did want to make one quick point, though, in deference to the mayor. This is a little different than a land use process. This is actually aged old. This is a petition to the king. We're petitioning to our rulers here. I think it's kind of funny that way, but that's truly what this is all about.
And what we're dealing with here is an old remnant highway. It was basically replaced by the Beaverton-Hillsdale Highway. And so we're dealing with a fragment, a highway that is no longer a highway. And it's not even, it's not the right size, it's not maintained, it's just a fragment. And it fragments these properties because the property behind it used to be a street frontage property, and now it's hidden behind these fragments in front of it. So none of these properties, they're all blighted. It's a brownfield. And the old right-of-way purpose is replaced by the new highway, and the old is in the wrong location.
Can you get to Exhibit 7 so that we can...
Okay, and then we're moving now to 11. So in order to do this petition, I know the staff talked about doing another petition, and this it was an extraordinarily difficult petition because even though there's five property owners affected, or six, we had to get literally 30 property owners out of hundreds, and people live all over the United States, and you have to deal with condos. And to do this again, I think it would be almost impossible. And then as the Barbara Sedlin pointed out, there's extraordinary expenses in doing this. Why should we do it? First is because the consolidated property would be large enough to develop an integrated multiple-use project as opposed to the fragments. The entire property would gain street frontage and allow development to be viewed by the public. The redevelopment would allow the PBOT to place access points at safe and logical locations. The redevelopment would allow the sidewalks to be widened along a significant length of the highway. The rear of the property is a conservation zone, and the streetification would allow the development to be pushed forward north outside the resource area. The property is a prime location for transit-oriented housing. The development results in increased property taxes, obviously, and SDCs. The development would gain jobs in construction. Lastly, I wanted to add that we've gone through an extensive planning process. We've had extensive community meetings. We were blessed by the Southwest community planning process and worked extensively with the neighborhood in that process, looking at the zoning, drawing pictures. So this isn't something that we're just springing on everyone new. It's been a long road.
When was the last time you talked to Southwest Neighborhoods?
I think the last time we came to council 2 years ago, I haven't talked to them since. I mean, I've talked to them all the time, but about this,
right.
It was 2 years ago when I came to council.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor and councilors, a couple of points. Again, this is, as Peter said, an old highway. It had been maintained in the past. It has at least two coats of asphalt on it. They're both very old. It has storm drains. It has city storm drains in it. It has curbs across part of it. It's a street that the city has chosen not to maintain. The petitioner asks that if the city is not going to maintain the street that it was given by the state, that the city give it back to the adjoining private landowners to use and make part of a development. It's a project that's taken an extraordinary amount of time to get to this point. Three specific neighborhood concerns were raised of the five landowners on the street. With regard to the business to the east, there was the question of access. There is no vacation proposed in front of that property. It retains access to the highway from an existing curb cut or driveway to the highway and retains the public right-of-way that's in front of that. There are two businesses to the west. One is a small industrial business. It has no parking. It uses the street for parking and for truck turnaround for loading and unloading. The applicant is offered to grant an easement for the half of the street. Below that, it's the yellow property on this side. The yellow property would be vacated and go to that property, not the petitioner. The applicant's offered to grant an easement for the portion of the green property parallel to or even with that vacated street, so there is still room for a truck turnaround at that point for that business's trucks to enter and exit. The third business is a restaurant. It requires parking. It used to have some on-site parking. It expanded the building. It doesn't now. We have proposed a parking design for the west end of this street that would provide quite a lot of parking. Back when there was a business on this property on the south end, the old L&M Lumber Company, there was no on-street parking in front of the lumber company. It had a continuous driveway for that point.
We've responded to all three needs that were identified. It's time for the city, at the end of this, from Barbara's point of view, 13 years,